three remarkable shots with stones. At one, I went to the cross in Bolton. There was a vast number of people, but many of them utterly wild. As soon as I began speaking, they began thrusting to and fro, endeavoring to throw me down from the steps on which I stood. They did so once or twice, but I went up again and continued my discourse. They then began to throw stones. At the same time, some got upon the cross behind me to push me down, on which I could not but observe how God overrules even the minutest circumstances. One man was bawling just at my ear when a stone struck him on the cheek, and he was still. A second was forcing his way down to me till another stone hit him on the forehead. It bounded back, the blood ran down, and he came no farther. The third, being close to me, stretched out his hand, and in an instant a sharp stone came upon the joints of his fingers. He shook his hand and was very quiet till I concluded my discourse and went away. Saturday, October 22nd. I spent an hour in observing the various works of God in the Physic Garden at Chelsea. It would be a noble improvement of the design if some able and industrious person were to make a full and accurate inquiry into the use and virtues of all these plants. Without this, what end does the heaping them thus together answer but the gratifying and idle curiosity? Monday, November 21st. I set out for Lee in Essex. It had rained hard in the former part of the night and was succeeded by a sharp frost, so that most of the road was like glass, and the northeast wind set just in our face. However, we reached Lee by 4 in the afternoon. Here was once a deep open harbor, but the sands have long since blocked it up and reduced a once flourishing town to a small ruinous village. I preached to most of the inhabitants of the place in the evening, to many in the morning, and then rode back to London. Chapter 8. Wesley and the Soldiers. In Ireland and Wales again. Wesley burned in effigy. Wesley as an editor. Wesley in Wales. 1749, Monday, April 3rd. I set out for Ireland. We waited more than 4 hours at the passage, by which delay I was forced to disappoint a large congregation at Newport. About 3, I came to Pedras, near Caerphilly. The congregation had awaited some hours, and I began immediately, wet and weary as I was, and we rejoiced over all our labors. In the evening and next morning, Tuesday the 4th, I preached at Cardiff. Oh, what a fair prospect was here some years ago! Surely this whole town would have known God, from the least even to the greatest, had it not been for men leaning to their own understanding instead of to the law and the testimony. At 12, I preached at Landmass to a loving, earnest people who do not desire to be any wiser than God. In the evening, I preached at Fonmon, the next morning at Cowbridge. Here is the scene changed since I was here last, amidst the madness of the people and the stone flying on every side. Now all is calm, the whole town is in good humor, and they flock to hear the glad tidings of salvation. In the evening, I preached at Lantrescent, Thursday the 6th. We rode to a hard-named place on the top of a mountain. I scarcely saw any house near. However, a large number of honest, simple people soon came together. But few could understand me, so Henry Lloyd, when I had done, repeated the substance of my sermon in Welsh. The behavior of the people recompensed us for our labor in climbing up to them. Mary's his brother. About noon we came to Aberdare, just as the bell was ringing for a burial. This had brought a great number together, to whom, after the burial, I preached in the church. We had almost continued rain from Aberdare to the great rough mountain that hangs over the vale of Brecknock. But as soon as we gained the top of this, we left the clouds behind us. We had a mild, fair, sunshiny evening the remainder of our journey. Friday the 7th, we reached Garth. Saturday the 8th, I married my brother and Sarah Gwynn. It was a solemn day, such as becomes the dignity of a Christian marriage. Wednesday the 12th, we came to Holyhead between 1 and 2, but all the ships were on the Irish side. One came in the next day, but could not go out, the wind being quite contrary. In this journey, I read over Statius's Phoebus. I wonder one man should write so well and so ill. Sometimes he is scarcely inferior to Virgil, sometimes as low as the dullest part of Ovid. In the evening I preached on, Be ye also ready, Matthew 24:44. The poor people now seemed to be much affected, and equally so the next night, so that I was not sorry that the wind was contrary. Saturday the 15th, we went on board at 6, the wind then standing due east. But no sooner were we out of the harbor than it turned southwest and blew a storm. Yet we made forward, and about 1 o'clock came within 2 or 3 leagues of land. The wind then wholly failed. A calm suddenly following a storm produced such a motion as I never felt before. But it was not long before the wind sprang up west, which obliged us to stand away for the skerries. When we wanted a league of shore, it fell calm again, so that there we rolled about till past sunset. But on the night we got back into Dublin Bay and landed soon after 3 at Dunleary, about 7 English miles from the city. Leaving William Tucker to follow me in a chaise, I walked straight away and came to Skinner's Alley a little before the time of preaching. I preached on, Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. 1 John 4:11. In the afternoon and again in the evening, in our own garden, I preached on, Let us come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Hebrews 7:25. On Thursday and Friday I examined the classes and was much comforted among them. I left about 400 in the society, and after all the stumbling blocks laid in the way, I found 449. Monday the 24th. The cold which I had had for some days growing worse and worse, and the swelling which began in my cheek increasing greatly and paining me much, I sent for Dr. Ruddy. But in the meantime I applied boiled nettles, which took away the pain in a moment. Afterward I used warm treacle, which so abated the swelling that before the doctor came I was almost well. However, he advised me not to go out that day, but I had appointed to read the letters in the evening. I returned home as early as I could and found no inconvenience. Methodist Lease and Abbey. Friday, May 12th. Before 9, we came to Neenog. I had no desire to preach, but one of the dragoons quartered there would take no denial, so I ordered a chair to be carried out and went to the marketplace. Presently such a congregation was gathered around me as I had not seen since I left Athlone. To these I spake as I was able, the whole counsel of God, and then rode cheerfully on to Limerick. Between 6 and 7 I preached at Mardyke, an open place without the walls, to about 2,000 people, not one of whom I observed either to laugh or to look about or to mind anything but the sermon. Some years since, an old abbey here was rebuilt with a design to have public service therein, but that design failing, only the shell of it was finished. Of this, lying useless, the society has taken a lease. Here I preached in the morning, Saturday the 13th, to 600 or 700 people. We then went to prayers at the cathedral, an ancient and venerable pile. In the afternoon I walked round the walls of the town, scarcely so large as Newcastle upon Tyne, and the fortifications are much in the same repair, very sufficient to keep out the wild Irish. 14th, being Whitsunday. Our church was more than full in the morning, many being obliged to stand without. I hardly knew how the time went, but continued speaking till near 7 o'clock. I went at 11 to the cathedral. I had been informed it was a custom here, for the gentry especially, to laugh and talk all the time of divine service, but I saw nothing of it. The whole congregation, rich and poor, behaved suitably to the occasion. In the evening I preached to a numerous congregation on, If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. John 7:37. We afterward met the society. 6 or 7 prisoners of hope were set at liberty this day. Monday the 15th. A company of revelers and dancers had in the afternoon taken possession of the place where I used to preach. Some advised me to go to another place, but I knew it needed not. As soon as ever I came in sight, the holiday mob vanished away. Wesley and the Soldiers Class. Wednesday the 17th. I met the class of soldiers, 8 of whom were Scotch Highlanders. Most of these were brought up well, but evil communications had corrupted good manners. They all said that from the time they entered into the army, they had grown worse and worse. But God had now given them another call, and they knew the day of their visitation. Monday the 22nd. The more I converse with this people, the more I am amazed. That God hath wrought a great work among them is manifest. And yet the main of them, believers and unbelievers, are not able to give a rational account of the plainest principles of religion. It is plain, God begins his work at the heart, then the inspiration of the highest giveth understanding. Wednesday the 24th. About 8, several of us took boat for Newtown, 6 miles from Limerick. After dinner, we took boat in order to return. The wind was extremely high. We endeavored to cross over to the leeward side of the river, but it was not possible. The boat, being small and overloaded, was soon deep in water, the more so because it leaked much, and the waves washed over us frequently, and there was no staying to empty it, all our men being obliged to row with all their strength. After they had toiled about an hour, the boat struck upon a rock, the point of which lay just under the water. It had 4 or 5 shocks, the wind driving us on before we could get clear. But our men wrought for life, and about 6 o'clock, God brought us safe to Limerick. A ridiculous question. Monday, June 5th. I rode to Blarney, 3 miles wide of Cork, where many of the society met me. I spent some time with them in exhortation and prayer, and then went on to Rathcormac. I was a little surprised at the acuteness of a gentleman here, who in conversation with Colonel Barry about late occurrences, said he had heard there was a people risen up that placed all religion in wearing long whiskers, and seriously asked whether these were not the same who called Methodists. Tuesday the 13th. We rode over to Gloucester, a beautiful seat built by an Englishman who had scarcely finished his house and laid out his gardens when he was called to his everlasting home. Sir L. P. and his lady dined with us, whether coming by accident or design, I know not. About 5 I preached in the stately saloon to a little company of plain, serious people, the fine ones looking on and some of them seeming to be a little affected. I expounded at Burr about 7 in the strongest manner I could, the story of Dives and Lazarus. Wednesday the 14th. We designed to dine at Firbane, about 12 miles from Burr. We stopped at the first inn in the town, but they did not care to entertain heretics. Neither did the people at the second inn. I alighted at the third and went in without asking any questions. About 7, I preached at Athlone. It being the time of the general review, abundance of soldiers and many officers were present. They all behaved with the utmost decency. But a gentleman of the town did not, which had like to cost him dear. Many swords were drawn, but the officers interposed, and it went no farther. Wednesday, July 19. I finished the translation of Martin Luther's life. Doubtless he was a man highly favored of God and a blessed instrument in his hand. But oh, what a pity that he had no faithful friend. None that would at all hazards rebuke him plainly and sharply for his rough, untractable spirit and bitter zeal for opinions so greatly obstructive to the work of God. A rough voyage. Thursday the 20th, about 10 at night, we embarked from Dublin for Bristol in a small sloop. I soon fell asleep. When I awakened in the morning, we were many leagues from land in a rough, pitching sea. Toward evening the wind turned more against us, so that we made little way. About 10 we were got between the bishop and his clerks, the rocks, so called, and the Welsh shore. The wind blew fresh from the south, so that the captain, fearing we should be driven on the rocky coast, steered back again to sea. On Saturday morning, we made the bishop and his clerks again and beat to and fro all the day. About 8 in the evening, it blew hard, and we had a rolling sea, notwithstanding which, at 4 on Sunday morning, we were within sight of Minehead. The greatest part of the day, we had a dead calm, but in the evening, the wind sprang up and carried us into King Road. On Monday morning, we landed at the quay in Bristol. Tuesday the 25th. I rode over to Kingswood and inquired particularly into the state of our school there. I was concerned to find that several of the rules had been habitually neglected. I judged it necessary, therefore, to lessen the family, suffering none to remain therein who were not clearly satisfied with them and determined to observe them all. Wednesday, September 6th. I reached Newcastle, and after resting a day and preaching 2 evenings and 2 mornings, with such a blessing as we have not often found, on Friday set out to visit the Northern Societies. I began with that at Morpeth, where I preached at 12 on one side of the marketplace. It was feared the market would draw the people from the sermon, but it was just the contrary. They quitted their stalls, and there was no buying or selling till the sermon was concluded. At Alnwick, likewise, I stood in the marketplace in the evening and exhorted a numerous congregation to be always ready for death, for judgment, for heaven. I felt what I spoke, as I believe did most that were present, both then and in the morning, while I besought them to present themselves a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God. Saturday the 9th. I rode slowly forward to Berwick. I was myself much out of order, but I would not lose the opportunity of calling in the evening all that were weary and heavy laden to him who hath said, I will give you rest. Tuesday the 26th, I had a solemn and delightful ride to Keswick, having my mind stayed on God. Wednesday the 27th, I took horse at 3:30. There was no moon or stars, but a thick mist, so that I could see neither road nor anything else, but I went as right as if it had been noonday. When I drew nigh Penroddock Moor, the mist vanished, the stars appeared, and the morning dawned, so I imagined all the danger was past. But when I was on the middle of the moor, the mist fell again on every side, and I quickly lost my way. I lifted up my heart. Immediately it cleared up, and I soon recovered the high road. On Allstone Moor, I missed my way again, and what I believe no stranger has done lately, rode through all the bogs without any stop, till I came to the vale and thence to Hindley Hill. A large congregation met in the evening. I expounded part of the 20th chapter of the Revelation. But oh, what a time this was! It was as though we were already standing before the great white throne. God was no less present with us in prayer when one just by me cried with a loud and bitter cry. I besought God to give us a token that all things should work together for good. He did so. He wrote pardon upon her heart, and we all rejoiced unto him with reverence. Wednesday, October 18. I rode at the desire of John Bennett to Rochdale in Lancashire. As soon as ever we entered the town, we found the streets lined on both sides with multitudes of people, shouting, cursing, blaspheming, and gnashing upon us with their teeth. Perceiving it would not be practicable to preach abroad, I went into a large room open to the street and called aloud, "Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts." The word of God prevailed over the fierceness of man. None opposed or interrupted, and there was